Hi, everybody. My name's Russell Stats. I'm an alcoholic.
Whoa. All right. Yeah, let me get situated here. I'm a member of the Carl Gables Group of Alcoholics. Oh, great. Carl Gables Group of Alcoholics Anonymous, and it's good to be here. I haven't found enough to have a drink, nor have I had a drink, since January 17th, 1981, and I'm grateful to God and to a lot of wonderful men who, some wonderful women too, but mostly my sponsors and some of my mentors, and maybe I'll talk a little bit about that. Who have helped me out along the way, and I'm going to talk a little bit tonight. I'm thinking that there's a possibility of my actually talking about the step. Step 7, I happen to like step 7, I like talking about it. And I'm going to do a little, I think a little recap or something too, so we'll get to it, we'll get somewhere around that deal. I want to read a few things out of the big book, so at least you'll get some pure AA here and on this deal. So let me start off by reading a couple of things out of the big book. This is on page... How many people came in here because they couldn't stop drinking? Oh, good. I'm glad I'm not the only one, you know? Here it is on page 26, Roman numeral 26. Here's what I'm going to do. Now, you don't have to buy into any of this stuff. This is just my opinion, you know, based upon reading the book and my experience in the last 30 years, watching other people and watching what's happened to myself. You know, you can read the book and you can learn a lot of stuff and be told a lot of stuff, but until you actually internalize it and feel that it's you. I mean, you could have 50 million people and all the circumstances of the world tell you you're an alcoholic. Until you admit it to your innermost self, it ain't going nowhere. I'll give you a little example of what I mean. When I was about 9 years sober, I was going through something. Has anybody ever gone through something in AA?
Yes.
You know what I mean? I can't, you know, it don't matter. Money, girls, boys, romance, stuff, whatever. It doesn't matter because, you know, no matter what happens in our life, if you're an alcoholic like me, everything is like what's going on in Egypt now. You know, what's going on in Egypt now? Have you seen that on TV? What's going on in Egypt? That's like what goes on in my brain, you know, every day. It's just my brain, you know, so... I was 9 years sober, going to meetings, doing a lot of service, doing this thing the way I think you're supposed to do it. Nobody does it perfectly. And I was going through one of those deals. I can't remember what it was about. I'm going to assume it had something to do with money because, you know, with a lot of us, that's the way God sort of like molds us and puts the bridle on us and gets us to do what he wants us to do. Sometimes it's money, sometimes it's relationships. But whatever it is, I was going through a rough time. Has anybody ever gone through a rough time? You know what I mean by rough time? I mean where you're scared. I mean, I'm not talking scared like for 5 minutes or for five. I mean like for like a week or two, three or four, that kind of thing. You know, you're just worried about what's going to happen to you and all that sort of stuff. And you just sort of like the best you can say you're doing is you're not drinking. I mean, the best you can say you're doing is at least I didn't drink today. But everything else looks like crap. And I got 9 years. And everything looks like crap. So, you know, when you've been plugging away at this thing for 9 years and doing it the best way you can and sponsoring people and speaking at meetings and doing step and doing all that sort of stuff, and you got 9 years sobriety and it all looks like crap. And once again, you're in the thick of the bullshit. The same crap you were going through when you had 1 year, when you had 6 months, when you had five. When that happens to you, you have a tendency to get discouraged. You have a tendency to, I mean, I guess that's why they say do not be discouraged. You've got a tendency to say, when is this ever going to get better? I mean, what's the story? This is ridiculous. It's 9 years I've been doing this thing, and I'm back in the crapper again. And you know what happens with people like me and maybe people like you is when I start going into the crapper, what I do is I start thinking. And generally, my thinking leads to me feeling even worse. I've never been able to think my way out of it, but it's sort of like an automatic response. If you feel kind of bad, just think real hard about what you're thinking about, so you can feel even worse. So I was by my dining room table, and trying to figure out when was this going to be better and why was I going through this stuff. And I opened up, you know, because when things really get bad and you got no place else to go and nothing else to do and, you know, what the heck, I opened up the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, the best time to read it is 3 o'clock in the morning or something like that when all else fails. So I opened up the big book and I opened it up to the part where it says, it's easy to rest on our laurels, but we're headed for trouble if we do, because alcohol is a subtle foe. Has anybody ever read that part?
Yeah.
He said, and here's what it says, is what we have, it, we are not, this is what it says. It says, we are not cured of alcoholism. All we have, what we have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of a spiritual condition. You understand what I'm saying? I mean, I'm sitting there saying, what the hell's wrong with me? What the hell's going on here? Why do I feel like this? It's been 9 years. I've been doing this thing. And all of a sudden, I open up the book. It says, we are not cured. What we have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. Now, I got to tell you something. I must have read that thing, you know, over 9 years. I must have read that thing maybe 100, 200 times. I've probably gone to so many meetings where people talked about that thing. And I read that thing. It was like I read it for the first time. And what I said is, as soon as I read it, I said, that's what they're talking about. This thing ain't never going to go away. I'm never going to be cured of this thing. It was so clear to me that that's what this thing is all about. There is no cure for alcoholism. All I've got is a daily reprieve contingent upon the maintenance of a spiritual condition. And it became clear to me that there was nothing, in a sense, wrong with me. There was nothing wrong. Of course, you know, when you're an alcoholic, if you don't feel bad, the whole world is. There's nothing wrong with me. I was just suffering from alcoholism. And all I have is a daily reprieve. I'm not cured. And it's contingent upon the maintenance of my spiritual condition. And of course, maybe I had to do something about my spiritual condition and things like that. And maybe I'd been resting on my laurels. But what I had was not unusual. It was the disease. It was part and parcel of the disease, whether I got 9 years or whether I got 30 years. And all of a sudden, it all made sense to me. I didn't feel, you know, one of the things that you want to panic about if you're an alcoholic is, you know, when is this going to end and what is going on? And as soon as somebody says to me, oh, I've been through that, all of a sudden I start feeling better. Because I think I'm the only guy who's ever been through this. Like, it's unusual, it's unique, you know. As soon as one guy says, well, I felt like that, well, I've been through that, all of a sudden, I start feeling better. And all of a sudden, I realized for the first time exactly what they meant, what they really meant when they said we are not cured of this disease. But I had to go through, even though I had read that many, many times, and I probably could have quoted it for you, I had to go through what I had to go through in order for it to make sense to me. So now it was not something I read in a book. It was like mine. I owned that deal. And you can read this book a million times about how we're powerless over alcohol and our life is unmanageable. You can read it a million times. You can have a million people say powerless. You can read on the board, first step, you're powerless over, we admit we're powerless over alcohol and our life has been unmanageable. You could admit that. You could say it. But until your powerless over alcohol and your life is unmanageable, you're not going to get that deal. I mean, you're going to have to go through. I mean, I should have understood how this thing worked from the very beginning. I didn't come in here because things were going good. You know, I came in here because I got humbled. I don't know much, you know, the seventh step has a lot to do with humility. It says humbly. I don't know much about humbly. You know, I know a lot about arrogant and being a know-it-all and thinking I know everything. I don't know much. I don't even know how to do humbling. I can't even say, well, tomorrow I'll wake up, I'll be humble. I think I'll be humble tonight. You know, I mean, I can't do that though. I should have understood how this thing worked when I came in here on the first step. Because I came in here and I was humbled. Because it's a humbling experience to walk from the back of the room to the front of the room and pick up a white chip. That's a humbling experience. And I can tell you this, I don't know much about humble, but I can tell you a whole lot about humiliation. All I know is this, whenever I was humbled, whenever I was, I shouldn't say all the time, but most of the time, when I was humbled, it was usually after a great deal of humiliation. So why should I think that that pattern is somehow broken after the first step? Why should I think, well, that ain't never going to happen to me again, considering all the old ideas and all the learning experiences I have to learn after I come in here? You know, why should I think that I'm never going to experience pain again? It's never going to be bad again. I'm never going to have a rough time again. When it's been proven to me that the best thing I ever did was walk into Alcoholics Anonymous, admitted that I was powerless over alcohol, and that only happened after repeated humiliations with alcohol. You know, but I have to go through, we all have to go through what we have to go through. So I want to read a couple things here. First of all, this is on page 26. Men and women drink because they like, essentially, because they like the effect produced by alcohol. The sensation is so elusive that while they admit it is injurious, they cannot, after a time, differentiate the true from the false. To them, their alcoholic life seems the only normal one. They are restless, irritable, and discontented unless they can again experience the sense of ease and comfort which comes at once by taking a few drinks. They are restless, irritable, and discontented, and that's why I drank. Yeah, I didn't know that's why I drank. I mean, did you know that's why you drank? I mean, you know, I have no idea. That's why I drank. I drank for the effect produced by it. I didn't drink for the taste. I drank for the effect. I drank because of what it did for me. And what my real problem was, which I learned later on over a period of years, it was sort of drummed into me. And so my real problem was not drinking. My real problem was, well, it became a problem, obviously. It becomes a big problem because you, when they arrest you, it's because of drinking. When you get in trouble, because of drinking. But my real problem was sobriety. I was not happy as a sober person. I could not stand over any period of time sober. Sober to me meant to be restless, irritable, discontented, ill at ease, uncomfortable. I drank because I needed the effect produced by alcohol because I did not like being sober. And later on in the book, it says to us, it says drinking is but a symptom of the disease. It's not even the disease. The real disease centers in our mind, not our body. Then we go on in the next part. And of course, I'm skipping some parts, but it says the tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. There is a common solution. There's a common way out. Then it goes on to say this, and this is an interesting thing, because this is said in There Is a Solution way before we get to chapter of the agnostic, way before we get to step five, before we get to the fifth chapter, way before we get to step three. This is what they say, and There Is a Solution. We have found much of heaven, and we have been rocketed into a fourth dimension of existence of which we had not even dreamed. The great fact is just this and nothing less, that we have had deep and effective spiritual experiences which have revolutionized our whole attitude towards life, towards our fellows, and towards God's universe. The central fact of our lives today is the absolute certainty that our Creator has entered into our hearts and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous. He has commenced to accomplish those things for us which we can never do for ourselves. He has commenced to accomplish those things for us which we can never do for ourselves. In the promises, which a lot of us read, and they read in groups, it says, we begin to see that God is doing, it says the same thing, God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Every meeting we go to, it says, there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. At the end of this, when we spoke about it at this meeting, it says, we can't manage our own lives. No human power could relieve their alcoholism. Only God could and would if he was sought. So before we even get to step three, when we're just talking about their solution, they're already talking about God. God being the central part of their lives. You know, I'm not saying I understood it. I'm not even saying I wanted to buy into it. I'm just saying what they're talking about in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous when they start talking about the solution to this thing. It's crystal clear. From the beginning of the book to the end of the book. From the Alpha to the Omega, it's all about a relationship with God. You don't have to believe it. You don't have to like it. As a matter of fact, you know what the book says? You're not going to like it. But it's there. I'm not making this stuff up. This isn't Russell's opinion about Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, this is what is said in the big book. Okay? It goes on page 28. It says, we in turn sought the same escape with all the desperation of drowning men. What seemed at first a flimsy reed has proved to be the loving and powerful hand of God. A new life has been given us, or if you prefer, a design for living that really works. Now, somewhere along the line, my sponsor was fond of saying to me, you know, because, you know, every alcoholic I've ever spoken to says things to me like, you don't understand, yes, but, I'm different, you know, I've never spoken to an alcoholic who doesn't think he's the brightest son of a bitch in the world, is not ready to argue with you unless they're really pounded down. And I was the same way. And before I even had a shot at getting this thing, I had to get to the point where I was willing to accept the possibility that no matter how bright I was, maybe when it came to me in my life, I was just stupid. I mean, my sponsor used to say things like, you know, Russ, your best thinking on your best day got you in here. And a lot of the older men that I hung out with that I wanted what they had, they used to sort of humiliate me. I mean, it was with love. I don't know how to explain humiliation with love. Maybe you're sponsored by somebody like that. But they used to say things to me in such a way where they'd give me a shot. You know, guys will do that, but it was with love, you know, and somehow they started, because, you know, if you're a man, I only know about men, I don't know about women, you don't want to be made a fool of, you don't want to be laughed at, you know, you want to be a tough guy, you want to think like you're cool and you're better than anybody, but you know something? Unfortunately, that sort of attitude gets you nowhere in this deal. And I was brought up with that attitude, who the hell do you think you are? You know, who are you to tell me this? You don't know. Stay out of my face. You don't know. Mind your own business. I was brought up with that attitude, and that attitude gets you drunk and dead in Alcoholics Anonymous. So when you have that attitude all your life, and it's the attitude of a scared person, when you have that attitude all your life, and you got to somehow get humble and say, I don't know shit, somehow get to that I don't know crap, I need help, will you help me, to get to that deal on the first step, it's a tough thing to do. You don't get to that attitude by reading like a line in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, some guy. You get to that attitude because something inside snaps and you admit to your innermost self that you need help. I can't force you to admit that you need help. I've sponsored a lot of guys over the last 30 years. And there are guys that come up here to me and I can't explain it. I know it when I see it. It's like pornography. I can't define it, but I know there are guys that come up to me and they want help. And they need help, and they ask for help. And I can tell they're sincere, and they want help. And the guys that come up to me, they don't want any help at all. They just want to chat. They don't want my opinion. They don't want my help. They may ask me. They just don't want it. You know, they want to tell me what they think they have to do, what they think the problem is. And you can just sort of tell. You can't really have conversations with them. Because, you know, every time you say anything before you finish your sentence, they're interrupting you and telling you things like you don't understand. They're not going to do this thing. They're just going to try to explain to you why they're right and you're wrong and you don't understand them because they're different. And, you know, and the truth is, God bless them. They're fantastic. Don't spend a lot of time arguing with them. We don't argue with, you know what said in 1212? John Barleycorn, alcohol is our best. Thank God for alcohol. Thank God. I mean, the only shot we got in here of eventually getting sober is because of the alcohol. Because that's the thing that takes you out, beats you down, and maybe gets you back in here with a new attitude. Because God knows I can't talk an alcoholic down. You know, I don't have enough time to try to talk an alcoholic down. They just get tougher the more you talk to them.
Yeah.
So, you know, what seemed at first the flimsy reed has proved to be the loving and powerful hand of God. So, I mean, I can't get, if you want to balk at this stuff, if you don't like this stuff, if you don't want to listen to this stuff, I can't do that. I can't help you with that. What you need to do is you need to experience another 10 or 15 years of this deal, either miserable or going out drinking or back and forth before you come in here willing to listen to this stuff. I can't change you. It says right here, it's if what if we have learned and felt and seen means anything at all. And you know, they don't equivocate on this. This isn't something where they're saying, well, we're not sure. This is pretty strong language. If what we have learned and felt and seen means anything at all, it means that all of us, that's all of us, whatever our race, creed, or color, are the children of a living creator, there's that creator again, with whom we may form a relationship. Now, what's a relationship? You know, I love this word relationship, because I like to be crystal on this, what a relationship is. This isn't a funny deal. You know, if I have a relationship with you, if I have a relationship with, you know, Terry, who, you know, read the traditions or something, you know, that means I think about Terry, I know who Terry is, I know what he looks like, you know, I wonder how he's doing, he wonders about me, how I'm doing, we speak to each other on the phone, maybe we'll email each other, I see him on the street, I say, how you doing, Terry? I have a relationship with him, I'm talking to this man, I'm thinking about him, I'm hanging out with him. That's having a relationship with somebody. Well, this book says, you don't have to, you know, you may ask why or how you do that. You may ask a lot of things, but this book talks about developing a relationship with God. And I'll tell you something, it must have something to do with the steps, because I know after you do about 10 of these things, you wind up on step 11, and step 11 says something like conscious contact. Talks about having a relationship with him. It says, now you need to make it stronger. You need to better that relationship. So this has something to do with this deal. You know, so if what we have learned and felt and seen means anything at all, it means that all of us, whatever our race, creed, and color, are the children of living Creator with whom we may form a relationship upon simple and understandable terms as soon as we are willing and honest enough to try. It's not because you want to. It's whether you're willing to. And you're being honest about it. You're willing and honest enough to try. It says, further on, clear-cut directions are given showing how we recovered. These are followed by 43 personal experiences, each individual. And that's what I try to do at every meeting. At every meeting I chair, I try to do this thing, what they tell us right here. Each individual, in the personal stories, describes in his own language and from his own point of view the way he established his relationship with God. That's what it says in the big book. You know, I'll have guys come up to me and say, you know, I know you talk a lot about God, or you're the God guy, or you talk about God. That's the way I understand it. That's what we're supposed to talk about in here. That's what this is about. That's what this whole thing is about. I just talk about what's worked in my life, what worked for them, what they talk about throughout the entire book and all their stories. Dr. Bob, the last thing he said, if you have some sort of intellectual pride, that, or if you're an atheist, agnostic, have some sort of intellectual pride that keeps you from understanding what we're talking about in this book, I feel sorry for you. Your Heavenly Father will never let you down. I never want to be dishonest about what they're talking about in this book. You know, you can honestly say, I don't like it, I don't want to do it. Well, that's fine. That's an honest statement. But I don't want to be dishonest about what they're talking about here. Okay. It goes on to say, so this is even before the stuff I read you right now about God and how they found it. This is even before we get to step 3. They're sort of like, you know, you're sort of reading this stuff. Now you may think, well, that's kind of tough on a newcomer. Well, I don't know. I don't know, because I know later on when they talk about the 12 and 12, they say burn the idea into the newcomer's mind. That job or no job, why he get well of anything as long as he has his relationship and he's dependent upon God. And apparently the old timers didn't feel this way, because if you read some of the stories, you read Bill Dodson's story, The Man on the Bed, they had these guys on their knees praying from the get-go. They weren't so scared about this thing, you know. They were not so worried about this thing, about the God deal. Later on, we get over to we agnostics. And what does we agnostics tell me? We agnostics tell me we haven't even gotten to the third step now. Now it's telling me, and we agnostics, that we're not going to like this thing. That's what it says. It says we're not going to like this thing. It says, we're not going to like this program. We're not going to want to. That's what it says. If you're an alcoholic, you're not going to want to do this program. Isn't that cute? Here's a program that's going to save your life. It's pretty clear in the program. It says, listen, you're not going to want to do it. It says you're going to want to think that this is a program having to do with thinking. Like a psychiatrist. Like a psychiatric program or a psychological program. You're going to think that this is a program like do the next right thing. Or some sort of rules or regulations, which you've never been able to keep your entire life. You're going to think that must be what this program... You're going to want this program to be that. So you can control it, and you can have it, and you can understand that, okay? But that's not what this program is about. And it tells you right here, it says, if a mere code of morals or a better philosophy of life were sufficient to overcome alcoholism... And I'm going to suggest something to you. You know, you don't have to do this. This is just a suggestion. Forget about whatever I tell you here tonight, or use it, or forget about whatever. Why don't you just do this, just for the heck of it, if you're going to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and if you agree at least this is the basic text. Why don't you just do this? Why don't you just say, well, I don't know whether Russell is right, or whether I'm right, or anybody's right, but I'm going to choose, just for the heck of it, because of the way my life has been going, I'm going to choose to believe what they say in the big book. Not say that it's possibly right, or, you know, maybe it's right, or I'll think about it. I'm going to choose to believe that no matter what I think about this, I'm going to make a decision to agree with what they say in here. That's all I'm asking you to do. Try their deal out. You know, here's it. Because I think they were serious about this stuff. It says, if a mere code of morals or a better philosophy of life was sufficient to overcome alcoholism, many of us would have recovered long ago. But we found that such codes and philosophies did not save us, no matter how much we tried. No matter how much we try. no matter how much we try. You know the guy who comes into AA for the 18,000th time and picks up his 15 millionth chip and says, this time I'm really going to do it? This time I'm really going to do it? You know that guy? You've been that guy sometime. I'm not putting down that guy. This time I'm really going to do it? He doesn't understand. You really can't do this thing. See, that's the whole point about being powerless. If we could say, this time I'm going to do it, this time I'm not going to drink, this time I'm going to be stay sober, this time I'm going to make it. If we could do that and that actually had some meaning and power behind it, we wouldn't need these groups, we wouldn't need these meetings, we wouldn't need God. We would just do that. With the power, if you want to know what the powerless thing means, I'll tell you what it means. It means you can't do it. The powerless thing means if you think you can stay sober, you can't. I don't know how to explain that to you. I know some people there think this guy's crazy. Because you're like football guys, you know. We can do it. We can do it. Yes, we can. We can do it. If you think you can do this, you cannot. You cannot do this thing. Because if you could do this thing, take God out of the picture, take belief and faith out of the picture, take this all things are possible with God. See to it that your relationship with Him is right and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. The reason God is in this thing is because the needed power we have isn't there. You don't have to believe me. Believe the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Or believe your own personal life. None of you guys are teenagers. Maybe there's a few in here. You guys have been around for a while. How's it been working out for you? It's not because you haven't been trying. I mean, you know, the height of insanity is doing the same crap over and over again. You know, come on. You ain't going to do it. Lack of power, that was our dilemma. We had to have a power. You know, I had a friend of mine who's just coming in the program. Sort of. I forget about that. I'll put it to you this way. He promised me on a stack of Bibles, sober, that he would meet me on Wednesday morning at 7:30 at the Carl Gables group. So I showed up at Wednesday morning at 7:30 at the Carl Gables group. He wasn't there. He swore on a stack of Bibles. He swore he was going to be there. He says, you can trust me, I will absolutely be there. I'm telling you, as God is my witness, I'll be there. He wasn't there. Now, it's unfortunate. Now, the good news is, I wasn't disappointed because I didn't think he was going to be there anyway. You know why? Because I know when all is said and done in Alcoholics Anonymous, there'll be a lot more said than done. Because I know that just because an alcoholic swears on a stack of Bible, I know because the nature of this disease is, even though you swear to God, as God is your witness, may your whole family die, you will do it. That means you got a 1 in 10 chance of showing up. See, I understand that, because you know why? Because I understand the disease of alcoholism. I understand what this disease is all about. It's about thinking that you have some sort of control over anything. When you have nothing. Lack of power, that was our dilemma. Lack of power, that's our dilemma. We had to find a power. I mean, I'll tell you what, you'd be far better off in this deal thinking that you have no power over nothing. And being scared. And I'll tell you what, if I had no power over nothing, I knew I didn't know I had have any power, I'd be a little worried. I'd be a little concerned. I'd be looking for sponsors, or I'd be looking for anything that moved to help me out. I'd be getting humble. Lack of power, that was our dilemma. We had to find a power by which we could live, and it had to be a power greater than ourselves. But where and how are we going to find our power? Well, that's exactly what this book is about. Its main object is to enable you to find a power greater than yourself, which will solve your problem. That means we've written a book that we believe to be spiritual as well as moral. And it means, of course, we're going to talk about God. Then it goes on to say this. Besides a seeming inability to accept much on faith, we often found ourselves handicapped by obstinacy, sensitiveness, and unreasoning prejudice. Many of us have been so touchy and even casual reference to spiritual things made us bristle with antagonism. This sort of thinking had to be abandoned. This sort of thinking had to be abandoned. I mean, I know what the big book says. It says this sort of thinking has to be abandoned. You can come up to me all you want and tell me, well, you don't agree with this. You think, I'll say, listen, have a nice life. I'm not going to argue with you. Because I know what the book says. And I believe the book. Because I've seen the people that make it in here. And I know that the only people that make it is the people that abandon that sort of thinking. You know, I mean, I'm just reading from the book. It goes on to say, on page 53, when we became alcoholics, crushed by self-imposed crisis, we could not postpone or evade. We had to fearlessly face the proposition that either God is or either God is everything or else he is nothing. God either is or he isn't. What was our choice to be? A actually comes down in favor of the God idea. I mean, all you have to do is read the rest of the book and read what these people say and read the steps and you understand that deal. It goes on to say, and I'm not going to repeat this, the stuff we say at every meeting. God couldn't would if he were sought. That's the deal. That's what happens. Then we finally arrive around step three, where we finally get down to the nitty-gritty. And you know, I love talking about this. I love quoting it at every meeting because this is the real deal. So we finally start looking at what the real problem. So what's the real problem? If the problem is that I can't stand being sober, if the problem is that being sober is what's this irritable and discontented, what is the real problem? What is my problem? What is your problem? Here's the problem. Selfishness and self-centeredness. I know that's the problem because that's what the book says. It says selfishness, self-centeredness. That, we think, is the root of our troubles. Driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity, we step on the toes of our fellows and they retaliate. Sometimes they hurt us seemingly without provocation, but we invariably find that at some time in the past, we have made decisions based on self, which later placed us in a position to be hurt. So our troubles, we think, are basically of our own making. They arise out of ourselves, and the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-will run riot, though he usually doesn't think so. Above everything, we alcoholics must be rid of this selfishness. Above everything, we alcoholics must be rid of this selfishness. I'm not saying you have to, listen, I'm not telling you have to be, I'm telling you that's what the book says. It says above everything, we have to get rid of this selfishness. We must or it kills us. We must or it kills us. Here's what it says. God makes that possible. It doesn't say good thinking, good orderly direction makes that possible. It doesn't say doing the next right thing makes that possible. It doesn't even say a good sponsor makes that possible. It doesn't say a psychiatrist. It doesn't say pills makes that possible. It doesn't say any of that. It says God makes that possible. And there often seems no way of entirely getting rid of self without his aid. Many of us had philosophical convictions galore. We could not live up to them, even though we would have liked to. And it says this is the how and why of it. First, we had to quit playing God. And I'm not going to go through that whole thing. We went through it at step six. It says when we sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. We had a new employer. Being all-powerful, he provided what we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well. He will provide everything you need. Doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be happy all the time. Doesn't necessarily mean that you're never going to have a bad time. Doesn't necessarily mean that you're not going to suffer or go through tough situations, but he's going to give you, this is what the book says, he will supply everything you need if you stay close to him and perform his work well. Established on such a footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves. This is what's going to happen to you. You're going to become less and less interested in yourself, our little plans and designs. More and more we became interested in seeing what we could contribute to life as we felt new power flow in, as we enjoyed peace of mind, as we discovered we could face life successfully, as we became conscious of his presence, we began to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, the hereafter we were reborn. And they go into the third step prayer. And then after the third step prayer, it says this, we thought well before taking this step, making sure we were ready, that we could at last abandon ourselves utterly to him. Utterly to him. And then it goes on after it talks about the third step, it goes into the fourth step. And then after the fourth step, it says this. I mean, he's all through this. Some of us had great self-confidence, but it didn't fully solve our fear problem or any other. When it made us cocky, it was worse. Perhaps there is a better way. We think so. If we are now on a different basis. Listen, are you on a different basis? Ask yourself this. Are you on a different basis, or are you on the same basis you were on, the same thinking you were on before you came to Alcoholics Anonymous, only dry? We are now on a different basis, trusting, the basis of trusting and relying upon God. We trust infinite God rather than our finite selves. We're in the world to play the role he assigns, just to the extent that we do as we think he would have us and humbly rely on him, does he enable us to match calamity with serenity. We never apologize to anyone for depending upon our Creator. We can laugh at those who think spirituality is a way of weakness. Paradoxically, it is a way of strength. The verdict of the ages is that faith means courage. All men of faith have courage. They trust their God. We never apologize for God. Instead, we let him demonstrate through us what he can do. We ask him to remove our fear and direct our attention to what he would have us be. At once we commence to outgrow fear. At once we commence to outgrow fear. Going on, it says, then at the beginning, of chapter 6 into action, before we do the fifth step, it says this. Having made our personal inventory, what shall we do about it? We have been trying to get a new attitude, you ready? A new relationship with our Creator. There's that Creator again. There's that relationship again. And to discover the obstacles in our path. We have admitted certain defects. We have ascertained in a rough way what the trouble is. We are put our finger on the weak items in our personal inventory. Now these are about to cast out. And we want to cast these things out because they stand in the way of our relationship with God. Doesn't it say in the fourth chapter, when it talks about resentments and fear, it says it blocks out the sunshine of the Spirit? So in order to improve our relationship with God, we have to cast out these defects of character. Then later on, it goes into step 6. Now we're talking about building, it's all about building a better relationship with God. And step 6 I talked about last week, and I'm just going to read this one part from the 12 and 12. It says this. It says this step, because this is all consistent, this step, now step 6, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Why do we want to remove these defects of character? Because we want to get perfect? Well, we're not going to get perfect in this lifetime. It tells us we're never going to get perfect. But why are we doing this? Based upon the consistency of the AA message, why are we trying to get rid of these defects of character? Because he is going to do for us what we cannot do for ourselves. He's going to change us and give us everything we need. But in order to get close to him and have a better relationship with him so the needed power is there, we need to get rid of these defects of character. That's the problem. That's the real problem. The problem of the defects of character are not because it's stopping you from getting a Camaro. The problem with the defects of character is not that it's stopping you from getting the girl. As a matter of fact, getting rid of the defect of character may stop you from getting rid of the girl. See, that's the real problem. You don't want to get rid of the defects. Guys, you don't want to get rid of the defects of character, because then what are you going to do about getting the girl? What are you going to do when it's between getting rid of the defect of character and getting the girl? Some of you guys are going to go for the girl. What are you going to do when you have to choose God and mammon? When you're out there on the street and you're saying, do I go for money or do I go for... When you have to make that decision, because you will all have to make that decision if you haven't found yourself in that situation so far, where you need to go either here, or either you're going to church or you're going to AA or you're going to see your sponsor or you're going to go to this business meeting. And you could do either one. You could do either one. And some of you are going to say, you know, I may lose that account, I may do that, but you know something, I'm going to go to an AA meeting. Some of you are going to say, you know something, I may lose the money or anything, but you know something, I'm going to go to church. Some of you are going to choose the spiritual angle, the spiritual side. And some of you are saying, I can't bother with that right now because I got to go for the money. You're going to make that choice. Every day you're going to be presented with those choices. And those choices and the choice you make has consequences. And it separates the men. The men and the boys are separated based upon the choices they make, because the choices they make determine really where your heart is. Because I can tell you something, if your sobriety and your happiness depends upon a thing, anything you can touch or feel, anything that can be taken away from you in this world, your health, you know, another person or anything, it will be taken away from. Your happiness and your sobriety will be hostage to the things of this world, which can rust and fade away and be taken away. And there's no person in here who didn't depend upon a person, place, or thing, or is it maybe dependent upon a person, place, or thing right now as we sit here, and all you do is worry about that person, place, or thing. And go around to people, what am I going to do about him? What am I going to do about her? What am I going to do about it? Because you have no control over it. There's nothing you can do. All your thinking can't control it. Because your peace doesn't lie with God, who will never abandon you. Nobody will never steal that from you. It lies with some person, place, or thing. This is the step that separates the men from the boys. So declares a well-loved clergyman who happens to be one of A's greatest friends. Imagine that, a clergyman. He goes on to explain that any person capable of enough willingness and honesty to try repeatedly step 6 on all his faults without any reservations whatsoever has indeed come a long way spiritually and is therefore entitled to be called, and here's the test, are you entitled to be called a man who is sincerely trying to grow in the image and likeness of his own Creator? Can they say that about you? I mean, you tell me you're doing step six. I'm saying, are you ready to grow in the image and likeness of your own creator? Are you willing to grow in the image and likeness? Now, nobody can be God. You're not going to be perfect. I'm not going to be perfect. But do I have some sort of, do I have a conception? Am I just trying to do the next right thing? And let me tell you something. The next right thing, that's a cop-out. In my deal, that's a cop-out. How about growing in the image and likeness of your creator? You know what it says in step six? It says this. That's a little bit tougher, isn't it? Perfection. Aiming at perfection. That's what step six is. It's not the next right thing. It's aiming at perfection. It says right here in step six. It says, so the difference between the men and the boys is the difference between striving for a self-determined objective and for the perfect objective, which is of God. Men will at once ask, how can we accept the entire implication of step six? Why, that is perfection. This sounds like a hard question, but practically speaking, it isn't. Only step one, where we made 100% percent admission that we're powerless over alcohol, can be practiced with absolute perfection. The remaining 11 steps state ideals. They are the goals to which we look. Do you have a concept? Do you have a relationship with the God of your understanding? Do you have a picture of that deal in your mind? It may be a flimsy, but do you have an idea of what the God, what that thing looks like? What it, you know? Listen, nobody's perfect. You know, I had sponsors. I sort of knew they weren't perfect. I knew they weren't God, but you know, to me, you know, they were the next best. I knew that I wanted to be like them. They sort of formed my idea. These guys that were looking ahead, they formed my idea of what this thing was all about. You know, when you have a conception of Him, when you have a conception, and I'm not going to tell you how to get that conception. I think you can get it from reading the Big Book. I think you can get it from reading the 12 and 12 and the principles. I think you can get it from hanging around people. Listen, you ever have a person in your life that's just plain evil and no good? I mean, besides yourself. I'm talking about, you know, you ever have a person in your life that's just evil, no good, a bad deal? And your mother, your father, whoever it is, says, don't follow that guy, don't hang around with that guy, and you hang around with him. And he knows that you hang around with him, you're just getting worse and worse and worse yourself. You're getting worse and worse and worse yourself. You find yourself in places you shouldn't be. You find yourself reading books you shouldn't read. You find yourself going to places you shouldn't be at, associating with people you shouldn't be at. And you realize that you're hanging around these people and you're following this person, you're feeling less and less good inside about yourself. You're cursing more. Your thought life is more, I'm an asshole, I'm an idiot, putting yourself down. You just keep on slipping down and down and down the more you follow this person. You know, and this is like some sort of evil, bad person, but you're just hanging around this person and you're getting worse and worse and worse. Well, you know, I'm going to tell you something. The reverse happens when you follow somebody who's on the right track. You know, so when you're following somebody on the right track, whether it be a sponsor, a clergyman, you know, Bill Wilson was following, you know, Ed Dowling, who's a Jesuit priest, and Sam Shoemaker. When you're following somebody who's on the right track, you know something? The image of yourself starts going up and up and up. You start thinking differently. You start getting a clearer picture. God, I don't want to rely on my mind for what the next right thing is. I don't want to rely on my mind for what's good or what's bad. I need to look to something else better than me. I have to have some idea. You know, listen, I know. You know, I know. Listen, I'll never know what God looks like. I mean, I might have some sort of idea at any point. You know, I can only as I understand Him. And He's infinite and He's all powerful. But you want to know something? Sometimes I'll be in a situation, I'll say, I know He's not hanging out here. I know where He doesn't want me to be. I'll look at a book and I'll say, I know He doesn't want me reading this stuff. I'll be watching, I'll say, I know He doesn't want me looking at this stuff. I'll be with a person, I'll say, I know He doesn't want me talking to this guy. I know where He hangs out. And I know where He wants me to be. And I know where He doesn't want me to be. And my picture of Him, because of the people I hang out with and the people I talk to and the people I relate to and the books I read and the stuff I do, gives me a real clear understanding of where I should be and where I shouldn't be and who I should hang around and who I shouldn't hang around and what kind of life I should lead and what kind of life I shouldn't lead and what I want to be and what I don't want to be. You understand? So it's more than just do the next right thing. It's about what they say in the sixth step, wanting to grow in the image and likeness of my Creator. And I have an idea of what His image and likeness is. And it has to do with loving people. You know, because the guy that I follow says, I'll tell you how I know whether you're with me, whether you love the brothers, whether you love people. So I know when my mind starts welling up and I want to talk badly about somebody or I want to put somebody down because I'm mad at them because they do something wrong. I know He doesn't want me to do that. I need to have a real clear, I'm a sick alcoholic. believe me, I need real guidance as to how I'm supposed to think. Because I am so capable of putting you down and gossiping about you and character assassinating you and believe I'm right in doing it and believe I'm doing the right thing because you're bad. I can go so far off on a tangent thinking I'm right because my alcoholic thinking is the only normal thinking for me. And I think it's good, you know, because I'm self-aware I'm right, though I usually don't. I don't think so. I can't take the chance on my own thinking. This morning at 7:30, I was with 40 guys, half of them are in AA, at a Bible study, studying the Bible. You can put that down. That's what our founding fathers did. But you know something? I have a real clear understanding of what's right and what's wrong, what's good and what's bad. I don't want to be fuzzy. You know, when you're fuzzy, then you end up doing what the hell you want to do anyway. You end up hanging out who you want to hang with anyway. You end up rational. You rationalize. You know what rationalize is? You tell yourself rational lies. And you get yourself in the jams. I need to hang around with men and women all the time. And I need to read books, things in black and white. So I am crystal clear. I can't afford to be fuzzy on this crap just so I can feel good and get away with shit. Because it's more important to me not only to be physically sober, but to be emotionally sober. And to feel good about myself and help other people. And to feel like I'm on the right track. And not so much wanting to do the next right thing, but wanting to be like him and wanting to make him proud of me and not wanting to disappoint him. And if I feel that way all the time, that's what I want to be. You want to know something? I'll end up doing the next right thing without even knowing it. And if my idea is just I just follow the rules, I won't even know what the rules are and I'll get lost and I'll break them anyway. Then it gets into step 7. We got 3 minutes. I'm going to cover this in 3 minutes. Don't worry. Page 71, certainly no alcohol, humbly, now listen, I want to start off by reading step 70. I want you to listen to this. This is going to be real difficult. Humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Okay, did you hear that? What does it say? Does anybody read that? What does it say? Humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Now listen, boys and girls. Asked who?
God.
Well, then how do you do this thing without God? Then how do you do this thing without God? If you have to, and if you can't even, it's not even asking him. You got to do it humbly. They used to be on your knees. Humbly. Ask your sponsor. Ask me. Ask him. And it's pretty clear who he is. He's our creator. So you tell me how you do this program. Now, can you do it without God? Hey, listen, you're an alcoholic. You can do anything you want. You can say, I swear I'll show up on Wednesday and not show up. You know what I mean? You can do whatever you want to do. I mean, I know that. Your life is your own. But I know what the book says. Right in the book it says what we're supposed to do. We ask him. You got to ask him humbly. How you get to humbly is a whole other story. As a matter of fact, you can't do the humbly asked. I can't do the humbly asked him. I don't even know how to do the humbly asked him. You hang around there long enough, you will humbly ask him. You have an idea of him, and you live your life, don't worry. He'll get you to the point, you'll be on your knees, you'll be asking him. It'll be 3 o'clock in the morning, you'll be begging him. Over 10 years, you'll be begging him. You won't be asking him. Certainly no alcoholic, and surely no member of AA wants to deprecate material achievement. Nor do we enter into a debate with many who still passionately cling to belief that to satisfy our basic natural desires is the main object of life. But we are sure that no class of people in the world ever made a worse mess of trying to live by the form of an alcoholic. Now listen to this. For thousands of years, we have been demanding more than our share of security, prestige, and romance. That's right, gals and guys. They throw romance right into, like, the cars, you know what I mean, and the boats and everything like that. Our share of romance. When we seemed to be succeeding, we drank to dream still greater dreams. When we were frustrated, even part, we drank for oblivion. Never was there enough of what we thought we wanted. The gal ain't going to do it. The guy ain't going to do it. The romance, the boat, none of that stuff is going to do it. It has to do with character building and choosing God. And later on it says, for us, just two more things. For us, the process of gaining a new perspective. So how do you get this thing? If you're sober, if you're working these steps, if you're working these steps to the best of your ability, and you want this thing more than anything else, and you're willing, don't worry about it. You don't even work the seventh step. It works you. For us, the process of gaining a new perspective, here's how it goes. It's going to be unbelievably painful. Aren't you excited? Did somebody tell you this was going to be no pain? They lied. they lie. I want to let you know that because it's going to save a lot of lives, because when it's 3 o'clock in the morning, you want to blow your brains out and you think you're going to die and this doesn't thing work, I want you to realize that Russell says it's working just fine. Because it's changing you. Because over a period of 10 years, you feel enough pain, just like with the booze, you will change. You will do things, you will end up being in places and doing things and going to church and doing stuff. You'll end up doing things that you would never, you'll be at a meeting and says, I can't believe I'm here. I can't believe I'm doing this. I would have never done this. What brought me to this? Pain. For us, the process of gaining a new perspective was unbelievably painful. It was only by repeated humiliations that we were forced to learn something about humility. It was only at the end of a long road marked by successive defeats and humiliations and the final crushing of our self-sufficiency that we began to feel humility as something more than a condition of groveling despair. Every newcomer in Alcoholics Anonymous is told and soon realizes for himself that his humble admission of powerlessness over alcohol is the first step towards liberation from his paralyzing grip. And it finally goes on to say, and the last thing I'm going to read is this. It says this. This improved perception of humility starts another revolutionary change in our outlook. Our eyes begin to open to the immense values which have come straight out of painful ego puncturing. Until now, our lives have been largely devoted to running from pain and problems. Isn't that what your deal is? Do anything to avoid the problem. Do anything to avoid the pain. Do anything to avoid the cops or the court or the police or paying the bill or anything. It says this, we fled from them as from a plague. We never wanted to deal with the fact of suffering. Escape by the battle was always our solution. Character building through suffering might be all right for saints, but it certainly didn't appeal to us. And what I learned through here, and I don't like it, I'm going to tell you something, if it was up to me, it'd be a different program. It would be all roses and candy, you know what I mean? But what I found and what I realize now is that when I'm going through crap, and I don't like it, and I'm scared, and I don't feel good, and I'm running around like a chicken with my head chopped off trying to figure out what's going on, that sometimes that's where most of the growth happens. That's where most of the change happens. And if I'm focused on Him, and I have a relationship with Him, and I'm looking to Him and saying, God, help me, and I have faith in Him, you know something? I will get through that deal with flying colors, and I'll change, and I'll be a better, more mature person for it. But if I don't have Him, if I have just do the next right thing, man, as soon as the bullets start flying, I'm running in the opposite direction. Because I don't have any faith in Him, because I don't know Him, and I don't have a relationship with Him, and all I see is bullets flying, and I'm scared out of my mind. And I don't have the courage that is needed in order to face that deal. So God bless you. Thank you very much.